Anyway, okay, I'm taking more time than I thought. I thought this was going to be very quick. So I just want to move through quickly how I see the world social form as postmodernist. The world social form has two main slogans. Another world is possible is the first one. And a second one, which I haven't heard that much, except from feminist groups, is no single way of thinking. And this brings out like the emphasis on diversity, the second slogan, no single way of thinking. According to their charter, any group can attend. As long as they subscribe to the charter, they aren't a political party and they aren't representing a government. Government officials can attend, but only as private individuals. So in a lot of ways, this whole emphasis on diversity is very much a postmodernist theme. And even to the extent of relativism, you know, it's like anybody, anything, broadly speaking. There's not much unity except on the idea that you're questioning globalization. And you can question globalization from a conservative position too. There's a big emphasis on bringing together new social movements, kind of a coalitional politics. And coalitional politics is the politics advocated by postmodernism. Laclau and Mouffe, their radical democracy, is based on kind of temporary contingent coalitions, so social movements, groups coming together, forming a coalition that's very temporary. And the world social form can be seen as a space, you know, in which groups come together and then they go apart. So there were also a lot of panels containing like a spectrum of representatives from various social groups, women's groups, gay groups, anti-racist groups. In Quito, a big emphasis was on, as well, indigenous people and the Afro-descendientes, the African minority groups in South America who are suffering a lot of racism. Okay, there's also a big emphasis on aestheticized politics at the World Social Forum. You know, if you see, there's a film documentary of the social forum called Another World is Possible. It was made in 2002. And, you know, you look at it and you see the colorful marches, the puppets, the banners, people dressed up. It's kind of the idea of the carnival against capitalism, very much. Very much. And art plays an important part in social movements, for sure. But there has been critiques of the politics of postmodernism for substituting aesthetics for politics, not just politicizing aesthetics, but, you know, turning a protest into the art. The aesthetics is like the end almost. Also, the fourth thing, and this is something I'm working on, the influence of the Marcosur group from South America. There's a lot of information on the web on the social forum, and I've been tracking down papers and statements by this group. They've had a central role. They're significant because they've had a central role in planning the World Social Forum. They're on that little committee in Brazil, one of the like main feminist groups on that committee. They have a campaign called Suboca Fundamental Contra Los Fundamentalismos. It's literally, your mouth is fundamental against fundamentalisms. It's translated in English more as people are fundamental against fundamentalisms. This is a very interesting group. I saw them in Quito, and in their campaign against fundamentalisms, they dress up in kind of a camp type outfit, you know, with lime and pink wigs, and they color their faces white, and they sing. They have a CD, and they have a song about, you know, people are fundamental against fundamentalism. It's cute. I went to one session they organized, and they did a little song and dance routine, and then they disappeared, and the representatives of the social movements, you know, it was a panel. They also had a great domestic work skit in Quito, out in the kind of fairground area. really interesting props and, you know, well acted little skit. So they were kind of going around the whole America social form anyway, you know, popping into like opening ceremony, closing ceremony, and out in the where the fair area was, singing and doing skits. So it's a very aestheticized politics on the one hand, but on the other hand, they also have some academics associated with it, and they've come out with some pretty heavy analysis. I picked up their position paper there in Spanish, and it was like really dense. They're looking at fundamentalism as encompassing not just religious fundamentalism, but they're using the term to encompass market fundamentalism. So, you know, the idea that there's only one system, neoliberalism, scientific fundamentalism, cultural fundamentalism, and political fundamentalism. And the political fundamentalism, if you read it, is like very much like a critique of Marxism. You know, no centralized parties, no orthodox line, you know, blah, blah, blah. The scientific fundamentalism, I mean, that's all about the idea that there's no truth. You know, you can see when you read this, it very much resonates with the postmodernist critique of truth and enlightenment.
So is it almost post-relativist then?
I would say it's relativist. I wouldn't say it's post-relativist, because there is a big in kind of deconstructing fundamentalism. They're emphasizing diversity, and that can lapse over into relativism. But it's interesting looking at this statement. I mean, what they're doing is taking the slogan of the World Social Forum, "No Single Way of Thinking," and using fundamentalism as kind of a category that represents unitary thought or totalizing thought, you know, as postmodernists would term it. When I actually look in some of the academic papers, track them down of some of the women in these groups, some of the women like Lillian Celiberti, Virginia Vargas, Lucy Garrido, you see in their citations references to Laclau and Mouffe, to Hart and Negri, kind of post-Marxist, post-modernist influenced autonomous Marxists, this kind of perspective.
Can you tell me one more time the name of the organization?
Okay. You can find them on the web. It's called, my Spanish is limited, Articulación Feminista Marcosur. It's a very interesting group.
Spell Mercosur.
Marcosur. Some critiques, and then I have some literature and stuff, and I can pass around. In Mumbai, there was a counterform called Mumbai Resistance 2004. Various Marxist factions were thought that the social form was just a reformist, you know, social justice tourism exercise, letting off of steam, you know, etc. They organized a counterform, but there were still a lot of Marxist groups inside as well, and leftist groups. So I'm just listing some main critiques. One of the first critiques from the left in general, and anarchists would agree too, who funds this and why? It turns out that the Ford Foundation is a big funder, UN agencies, NGOs linked to governments and funded by transnational corporations. At the Asian Social Forum, there were a lot of critiques in India of, you know, who was funding this. The organizers denied the Ford Foundation was involved. And somebody did some research. And supposedly, if you go to the Ford Foundation website, you can see, you know, how many millions they gave to the Asian Social Forum. So just to pass around a few things here. I collected, it was interesting, there were a lot of critics inside. So I was buying some of these little booklets. This is the cartoons, and it's quite funny. This is a critique of the world social form via cartoons. That's cute. And this is another one, a little booklet of articles. They're supposedly on the web. World Social Form, Dissent or Diversion. Quite an interesting analysis. It's Marxist. But what they say is still applicable, I think, to anybody coming from the left. Basically, they're saying the world social form is a fusion of social democracy and NGO social activism. It seeks to diffuse the struggle against imperialist globalization. It strives to seek alternatives within the status quo, within the world capitalist system. It rejects class struggle and opposes revolutionary violence, and acts as a safety valve for venting the wrath of the masses through peaceful channels. So just to pass that, you can take a look at that. So a second critique is it's dominated by NGOs, by liberal reformist anti-globalization groups, churches. When we talk about being anti-globalization and anti-globalization movement, there's been a lot of critique of that term, you know, because some people say that it's not very precise, and maybe there's like a globalization from below. I think a lot of the groups at the World Social Forum are anti-globalization more than anti-capitalist, and anti-globalization in different forms. For example, I'd say the majority of groups there are anti-globalized capitalism, but not anti-capitalism per se. Like the NGOs, what they want is globalized capitalism with a human face. They just want a new social democratic compromise. And a lot of the trade unions that are there too. Quite reformist. So, you know, anti-globalization is not necessarily a totally invalid term for them. You can add anti-corporate globalization, but their anti-capitalism doesn't go very far. Also, most of the Dalit groups there, you know, it was nice to have the diversity of castes and classes and races, but when you look closely, most of the Dalit groups were there, brought there by an NGO. You know, they're all marching in a line with their little caps with some kind of logo on it. And it was usually a church organization, a union, an NGO. There weren't that many autonomous groups. And when I went to their sessions, the big theme was the reservation system. That's like affirmative action. The Indian government reserved so many places in universities and educational institutes and that to make sure that the Dalits could become educated. And that's mainly what they were arguing for. So it was very reformist. Okay, postmodernist influence on the agenda. Chico Whitaker from Brazil, one of the main organizers right from the beginning of the World Social Forum, has a piece in this book, and this is a very good book if anybody wants to find out more about the World Social Forum. The articles can actually be downloaded from the web.
What's the title?
Challenging Empires, mm-hmm. World Social Forum.
So this is a very good book because it has a spectrum of views. It has views in support, critiques from Marxists, critiques from feminists, critiques from anarchists. A whole diversity of views there. And you can find this on the web. Anyway, the article by Chico Whitaker is interesting because he's one of the central organizers. And I heard him talk in Quito as well. And the theme of his talk in Quito was the same as his paper there. In response to the critiques of the left within the social form for making this into a movement, he wants to preserve the world social form as a space, not a movement. And basically a space for dialogue and networking. So the world social form never comes out as a whole with any concrete proposals or programs. There's no spokespeople. It's just a space. And when you read why he's justifying that, you know, it's interesting because he's saying that movements, social movements, are always hierarchical. He is erasing the existence of left libertarian movements, anarchist movements, feminist movements, which have consciously tried to practice horizontal politics. So he's setting up kind of a dualism that any kind of movement has to be hierarchical. And I think there he's referring to orthodox Marxist and socialist movements that have been hierarchical. And then the alternative becomes this kind of amorphous, coalitional network, a very postmodernist approach. He also talks about, he uses the example of the plaza, you know, the social form is like the plaza in a Latin American city or town. Everybody comes together there. I mean, that's a very populist conception. It erases class differences. Foucault's theory of power. Power is productive. You can't have coherent programs or long-term movements. I mean, this fits in with the idea of the world social form. You can't have any final statement, any program that everybody agrees with. Okay, and even anarchists have come under criticism by postmodernists. I don't know if anybody has seen Iris Marion Young's critique of Bookchin. She's a postmodernist. I think it's in her book. It's a book from the 90s. Feminism and the Politics of Difference, something like that. I have, as a feminist, critiques of Bookchin. But she's just like setting up social ecology as a politics of totalitarianism from a postmodernist perspective. I think that's more than a little exaggerated. So Bookchin has been very critical of postmodernism because of Foucault's notion that power is always productive, that any kind of alternative is going to entail power relations that will also oppress people. So you can never have anything beyond a micropolitics. You can't kind of construct coherent social alternatives. And you can see that in Whitaker's arguments. You know, the relativism of the social form is there too in the call for diversity. You know, these groups like Diverse Women for Diversity and Feminists for Gift Economy. I think what they're espousing really is a nationalist, or at least Diverse Women for Diversity, Vandana Shiva. It's against globalization, but it's seeing pre-modernity, feudalism almost, as the alternative. And it's erasing all the caste and class oppressions in feudal society. And a lot of people have been very critical of Vandana Shiva, feminists in India like Bina Agarwal, scathingly critical of Vandana Shiva, and Mirananda too. When you have this kind of anything goes and no coherent program, any leftist critics within the social form get marginalized too. You know, there were Marxist groups, and I didn't see any anarchists in the social form in Mumbai. The only mention I saw of anarchism was in the little cartoons, you know, where they, reformist NGOs, churches, you know, the Communist Party they didn't like, the wrong brand of Marxism, and anarchism was in there. But all the literature tables I saw, nothing in Mumbai. In Quito, I saw one guy from Bolivia who had a little literature table with anarchist literature. One guy, you know, in little table like the size of this. He had his rainbow flag, and he had a translation of Bookchin and a translation of Chomsky and a translation of Stirner. He was doing the whole bit, you know, the ecology, the lesbian gay, the, you know, unionism. Anyway, and I asked him, you know, were there many anarchists? There are anarchists in Bolivia, but he said it was too expensive for them to come, even to Quito. because Bolivia's pretty poor in South American standards. And, you know, they couldn't afford to come. So he was the only one. And the Marcosaur group is very interesting. But, you know, their whole emphasis on your mouth is fundamental against fundamentalism is kind of individualistic. And the academic analysis on the web, I read a report from one feminist who went to one of their sessions and complained about it being heavy POMO jargon, you know, which seems to be kind of out of keeping at a World Social Forum. But, you know, there's a danger of reducing fundamentalism to a discursive category, getting all caught up in this totalistic, no totalistic ideas and, you know, changing it to something that's more discursive and cultural and taking some of the focus away from real fundamentalism. Okay, just quickly, anarchist stance on this. Anarchists have been critical of the World Social Forum. Cindy has an article, Cindy Milstein, in Social Anarchism a couple of years back, critiquing the World Social Forum. And there's another article in it too, basically because it's reformist and all the rest of it. What is interesting is there's another global network called People's Global Action. And that's also on the web. And I find that the politics of that much more interesting. That's not corporate funded. It tends to be much more grassroots, less NGO. It's not big NGO. It tends to be more grassroots activist groups. The Zapatistas are associated with that. There tends to be more of a left libertarian influence in the PGA. And it's also in taking a stance against globalization. It's also taking a stance against feudalism, which is interesting, you know, because they're recognizing a lot of people in countries of the South. And this is a growing danger too in the West, that, well, people in the countries of the South, a lot of people in the countryside are still living pretty much under feudal conditions. And there is a danger of nationalism in the West. Anyway, People's Global Action is interesting. I think from an anarchist perspective, it's necessary to counter the dualism of movement versus space and to point out that there is a left libertarian politics that can be non-hierarchical. There's also an interesting article, last thing, in this book on the social forum by an anarchist who went to the European Social Forum. And there was a parallel libertarian social forum that was in 2003. And his article is about whether we should abandon or contaminate the social forms. He thinks that we shouldn't totally abandon them, but we should go in and participate and try and question and critique. And also particularly at the local level, he sees the local social forms as being a site that's more potentially relevant than the World Social Forum. And I can see even in Alberta, I mean, the Alberta Social Forum is tiny. The politics there are like ultra depressing in Alberta. It's Canada's Texas, really, you know, neoliberalism. But that social forum had anti-poverty groups. It had a disabled activist group where a lot of mentally disabled people came from Calgary up there and presented their own workshop. And that was quite impressive. I mean, that's a grassroots. The anti-poverty groups are quite grassroots. Another idea that was proposed was that the World Social Forum, maybe with more input from the left in general, might become something like a reincarnation of the First Socialist International, which included both the Marxists and the anarchists. I don't see that happening, but it would be interesting. I just see it as too dominated by NGOs, but it would certainly be interesting. Okay. I'm going to stop here. I think I've used up more than enough time. Sorry, it's a little difficult to judge. Okay, so questions, comments?
Yeah, I'm really curious about actually something that also came up in a panel you were on the other day when you were criticizing post-structuralist, the discourse around that as being pitting up on one side truth and the other side, or rather certainty on one side versus relativism on the other side. I mean, I know you've been critical of Bookchin's attempts to sort of ground an ethics. And, you know, but you were saying that there's, while you don't have to go for entire certainty, there's ways to distinguish between bad and worse. And it's been a while since I've read your article on that. And when I read it, I wasn't as familiar with Kant and Hegel. So, like, there was a lot of, like, political philosophy background that I'm actually reading now. And I want to come back to that at some point. But it would just be, I don't know, for in the room, like, how many people are sort of familiar with that attempt that Bookchin has made, dialectical naturalism to kind of ground ethics. Maybe it doesn't have to be a really specific discussion, but I'm just really curious about, I mean, that seems to be like a central philosophical question that's coming up in your presentation, is like how truth, and especially in relationship to politics and grounding of politics, a micropolitics versus one that can claim broader relevancy. So I'm just wondering if you can sort of even like articulate like how you want to do that, if not grounding ethics in some kind of reading of natural evolution, like what are you trying to do?
Yeah.
How well, would
I think anytime any attempt to ground politics in nature becomes problematic. You know, it's been used against women, it's been used against racial groups. You know, you can prove like superior, inferior, or nature has been used as a source of truth. And Bookchin is using nature, his view of nature, to show that we're moving toward this greater unity. And he uses it to negate feminism. Feminism becomes a crude particularism. You know, if it's nature, if it's natural, then everybody has to conform. And that's been a big problem with Marxist politics and authoritarian socialisms, you know, arguing that Marxism is scientific and it's following the principles of nature and, you know, we need to, like, put these people in the gulag or whatever because they're standing in the way of progress, that you have a certain path in history you have to follow and the ends justify the means. And this is all done in the name of truth and certainty. So anytime you argue on the basis of, like, absolute truth, absolute certainty, it gets problematic because you get into an authoritarian politics. Now, Bookchin doesn't advocate any kind of authoritarian politics, for sure. But he's trying to look at nature and see an anti-authoritarian politics in nature. And that still is problematic because, I mean, he has his biases. When you look at nature, you can look at so many different places in nature and so many different scales, and you can see whatever you want to see. It doesn't tell you anything. And he's looking at it because he wants to see something that argues for a general interest, you know, in feminism and any kind of specific groups struggling against particular oppressions and become aberrations or, you know, crude particularisms. Postmodernism is also using nature. Even though they're critical of essentialism, they're using nature, but they're seeing nature as chaotic and complex and multiple. And so that there's no truth. Now, some people will deny its relativism, but, you know, it tends to lapse over into that when you see, when you can't find, if you're using nature as a model, and then your picture of society is it's so complex and so multiple and so diverse that you can't really have any kind of universality whatsoever. So I think that just kind of paralyzes social movements if you lapse into total relativism. You can't critique, you can't question. So I think the postmodernist critique of totality is important for politics, you know, to get away from anti-authoritarian politics. But to go to the other extreme is dualistic, you know, to replace universalism with particularism is problematic too, because you can't really go anywhere. You can't formulate any kind of program. So what I'm looking at is getting away from nature as naturalism. And I mean, this is complicated to get into here, but it is in my paper, From Democracy and Nature. And that is using, comes from Kant. Kant's treatment of what he calls a subjective universalism, where based on discussions of art, Kant's a treatment of the analytic of the beautiful. Okay, and Hannah Arendt has also worked on this too. And Adorno has been very influenced by Kant. So the idea is that get away from trying to root your politics in nature altogether, and to root your politics in a kind of a democratic process where you're using reason to critique, to question, and you can acknowledge that there's no absolute truth without lapsing into relativism, you know, to at least to use reason and critique to distinguish between better and worse. I think, you know, from a perspective of Kant or Adorno, and in general, a left libertarian perspective that's not rooted in nature. What you can reject the notion of absolute truth, but you can still accept that there is better and worse. I mean, it's not just anything goes, but you know, if you have a politics, you have to look at who's advocating that, what their interests are, you know, the reasons supporting it. And then often that enables you to distinguish somewhat between what's problematic and what's better. I mean, there's no perfection. There's no simple answer. I mean, this is all comes out in struggle, and it's a difficult process. Any other quick questions? It's
a very simple question. Mm-hmm. Who can go to these world social forums?
Anyone can go. Anyone can go. They have two categories of registration: individuals and delegates. Delegates tend to be like union members, NGO members, representatives. But you can also register as an individual. So there's a lot of the organizing is done via the web. There is a website for the World Social Forum. If you Google that, and Google various like regional forums, and you can register. It's open. You know, unless you're going, I presume you're not like a head of government or, you know, as a like part of a, they don't allow parties. And I think that's mainly a stance against communist parties, Marxist parties, that sort of thing. A lot of individual Marxists go, but yeah. So anybody can go. It's interesting to go and to see. And, you know, there's some very interesting groups there and some very problematic groups. We even had Falun Dafa at the Alberta Social Forum. Now, is that the answer to globalized capitalism?
Who is it?
Falun Dafa, you know, the Chinese kind of, I don't know, mystical, I don't know how to describe them. It's a movement that arose in China recently. That it has kind of mystical religious connotations, and the Chinese government is repressing it very strongly. They meet in the park near where I live in Calgary, and on Sundays, and do kind of rituals and stuff like that. But I can't see them as an answer to corporate globalization.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This has been the conclusion of a two-part recording with Regina Cochran on the 2004 World Social Forum, A Left Libertarian Ecological Feminist Critique. She spoke at the 2004 Renewing the Anarchist Tradition Conference at Goddard College in Plainfield, Vermont, on September 26, 2004. Thanks for listening.